You're listening to Graphic Novel Explorers Club Podcast, an audio book club.
Greetings, explorers. I'm one of your hosts, Dennis, joined by...
Johnny.
And a special guest...
Brian.
Today we're discussing WYSIWYG by writer and artist Ed Pisker. We hope you already read today's title because all three of us have read the book, so beware, spoilers ahead. Explorers can share their opinions and thoughts with us by leaving a comment on our Facebook page or over on Twitter and Instagram at GN Explorers Club. We're now available on YouTube, so go check it out.
So today we're reading WYSIWYG. The title of the book is spelled W-I-Z-Z-Y-W-I-G, which is not the...
What
it's
you
like
see,
the phonetical spelling.
Yeah. Not what you see is what you get. Yeah.
And Brian, you picked this out. What was your...
Yeah, well, I was saying before we were recording, I saw the cover in Big Brother Comics here in Sacramento, and it's a Apple II kind of mock-up cover. It's got the rainbow spine on it. It's very like Apple fanboy. They make fun of Apple inside of the book, so yeah. It's not really like an Apple fanboy book, really. When I got into reading on it, it's actually, and I don't know if you guys know this, it's a fictionalized account of the actual hacker Kevin Mitnick.
Yeah, I had read somewhere it's a
amalgamation
of like three different.
Yeah,
hackers.
I mean, there's a bunch of it is like 99% Kevin Mitnick. A bunch of the stuff didn't happen to Kevin Mitnick. He didn't lose an arm. Spoilers. Yeah, sorry, Dennis.
See, I thought that was where this crossed over with The Walking Dead, and you see how what's his face lost his hand.
Yeah.
But did they ever do that in the TV show? Did he lose his hand?
No, the main guy. No, yeah, I stopped watching that. Yeah. Any reasonable person stopped watching Walking Dead a long time ago.
AMC doesn't know that people stopped watching that show a long time ago. Anyways, this was published by Top Shelf in 2011.
Ed Pisker
wrote it and illustrated it. And do yourself a favor and go check out his YouTube channel called Cartoonist Kayfabe. That's K-A-Y-F-A-B-E. And you get to hear his wonderful accent. It's amazing because he's from the Pittsburgh area. I love it. And I don't know if you've ever seen photos of Ed, but he's always wearing like a baseball hat and a hoodie with a kind of pulled down and sunglasses. And that's him through the entire thing. It's great. I watched several episodes of it. He's on there with another published cartoonist, comic book artist, and they just go into detail about different things. So it's definitely worth checking out. Cartoonist Kayfabe. I don't know what that means, Kayfabe. So our main character in the story is Kevin Boing Thump Finical. I tried looking up Finical to see if there was anything.
If it's a word or anything.
Yeah, because it's spelled P-H-E-N-I-C-L-E. Mm-hmm. I looked it up with an F. I couldn't really find anything on it. So I thought maybe that might have to do something with hacking or...
Right.
Phone freaking or something like that, but I couldn't find anything about it.
Yeah, I don't know what Boing Thump is in reference to either, except for maybe a reference to Boing Boing, the website, which covers a lot of topics similar to this. And I don't know what Kevin Mitnick, the real Kevin, if he had what his hacker handle was or if that relates to any of that. So
In the story, the name comes about because he overhears this guy talking about having sex when he's a kid.
Right.
Yeah. No, that was a funny scene. Now,
how familiar are you guys with like this scene beforehand?
I'm very familiar. I'm not a hacker, but I don't do penetration testing or I'm not a sysadmin or anything like that. But I grew up in this. I went to 2600 meetings, which is the Hacker Quarterly zine. I used to go to those meetings at Downtown Plaza. Like, they talk about blue boxes and red boxes in here. Mm-hmm. I made those when I was a kid. I mean, not a kid. I was like a teenager, you know.
In high school, I had a friend who had, it looked like a calculator almost. And I'd be at the Sunrise Mall here in Sacramento. And he would hold this thing up. He would have people's phone numbers or something programmed in it. And he would just hold it up to the phone, the receiver part, and click this button and make a couple tones and then make a dial sound. Mm-hmm. And then be like, hey, Michelle, it's Aaron. Yeah. What are you doing? And I'm like, the fuck, dude? How did you?
I can definitely talk about stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a hacker. I root and rom my phones every once in a while and I do Linux stuff, but it's like, it's not.
Not as in depth as these.
No,
people.
I mean, I did a lot of this back when. The second that they started muting payphone handsets, it completely negated 100% of blue boxes and red boxes and all that stuff. Definitely can't do that with cell phone technology or, you know, so.
Yeah, this area, I'm somewhat familiar, but I never did it. And this area always fascinated me because, like, the whole idea of being able to do exactly what you said, Johnny, what we see in the book is just, it's just so, it's almost digital but analog in a way. It's like a tactile hacking. But, you know, it's not just tapping on your keyboard. It's like actually building electronics and
It was very physical. Like it was. I mean, I also had like the red box and blue box programs on my laptop, and I was that little shit that like brought a laptop to like Sunrise Mall and would like do dial tone, you know, different hertz tones into the phone receiver, and it was
just
like,
to see what would happen. Or
well, I mean, it would work the same as that little like tactile one without having to go to a Radio Shack and buying the specific hertz crystals and speakers to do all that stuff. Yeah,
it's so fascinating.
See, I'm familiar with kyber crystals from Star Wars, which are what power lightsabers.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Lightsabers are real, dude.
WYSIWYG, yeah, Star Wars.
WYSIWYG'd your lightsaber. Yeah, so our main character is Kevin Boing Thump Finnickle. His best friend is Winston Smith, who runs a radio station. He's our real guy through the story until the latter half of it when Kevin starts to take over the narrative. It starts off with people talking about the legend of Boing Thump, which reminded me a lot of Edward Snowden and Chelsea Manning, where they're just, nobody has any factual things.
Right.
They just are repeating things that they hear, which Chelsea Manning pops up at the end of the story back when she was still using her
dead name.
Birth name. Yeah. And I thought that was interesting how he tied that all back in. Did the hacker that you were talking about?
Kevin Mitnick?
Yeah. Is he still in prison? Or?
No. He's out. He runs a consulting company. I mean, a lot of the stuff is, like I said, verbatim what happened to him. He was a hacker in the 80s and 90s. He started with, when he was a preteen, doing the bus ticket
scam. Yeah.
And then he got into phone freaking, which is a combination of phone hacking.
Yeah,
it means basically how to get free phone calls and stuff like that. And he'd gotten into like BBSing and
which are basically discussion boards,
bulletin board systems.
Yeah,
yeah,
that were the somewhat precursor to the internet. And when the internet really took off, those things kind of died off.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially when you stopped having, because you needed to dial up in order to dial into a BBS.
Okay, so going back to the book, what interested me is that, one, I like how they introduce it in the structure of the story, how he's almost like a D.B. Cooper, you know, this kind of mythical outlaw.
One of the talking heads even compares him to D.B. Cooper.
Right. And what's fascinating to me, though, I couldn't quite pin it down, but what do you guys think his art choice for Kevin's eyes, like it was like a little bit of like Tintin, a little bit of Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah,
like there was a purposeful choice to have it different from the other characters, which have more realistic eyes.
Yeah, everyone else is drawn much more detailed than Kevin is. Like I don't know what the artistic decision
at first
is.
I thought that was going to just be him, naive kid, and then as he evolves, like we've seen in some other books, if the character grows and suddenly he becomes more detailed or different, but his face is always the same, even when he's rough. And
he even has like, who's
Blondie. It almost seems like Blondie the comic.
Well, yeah. I got the Tintin Bagwood eyes, but then he's almost got like Jughead's nose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I definitely got the Tintin thing. They definitely portray like the world around him super gritty. And like, he's kind of, I felt like his eyes were kind of empty, as in like, his actions and who he is kind of more of a reflection of the world around him, like what's been kind of done to him. He's like, I mean, from the very get-go, he's just perpetually bullied and like,
and
the system's after him. And yeah, it's really rough. And so there's definitely a naivete like read into his character, and kind of an innocence. Yeah. So,
because a lot of times his driving force really is just, it's not nefarious, it's just curiosity. And wanting to figure things out.
Yeah, and cutting through sort of like social norms.
Right.
Like whatever society's rules are, like why are these the rules?
But not in a weird like, you know, fuck this.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is fascinating to me.
He talks about how he loves puzzles.
Right.
And it's like, that's his driving thing, is to figure out the puzzle of whatever it is, be it society, phone systems, the bus. He figures out as a kid how to run the scam of collecting discarded bus
transfer
passes
and getting the same stamp
which he asks innocently to the bus driver, but the bus driver thinks it's just this
kid.
Did
he ask innocently? I thought he did it on purpose.
Okay. Yeah, but like it's received as an innocent question from a child.
His cover is that I want to make some stars for my
like project. That's all wrapped around the innocence of it, is all wrapped around this 80s 90s hacker culture, like techno utopian culture, mm-hmm. of like information should be free, you should hack systems to like understand them, mm-hmm. it's not even like malevolent, like I'm trying to get money or people's mm-hmm. information or stuff like that. It's like these are puzzles to be figured out. Right. And so it's like him doing the lockpicking set on his on his desk and stuff like that. So the real Kevin Mitnick was interviewed, I think, on Radio Motherboard podcast, if I'm remembering correctly. And he was going off about like him doing all this stuff to evade the feds because he was on the lam, just like Kevin Boyingthump here, for like years, like 2.5 years, like doing the same shit that Kevin in the book is doing. And he was getting into really like technical detail stuff, and one of the editors was like, why did you do that? And he was like, oh, well, because it makes sense for me to do this, this, and this, like, technical thing. And she was like, no, why do you do any of this? Like, this is insanity. You're taking dead people's social security numbers and like just and he kind of explains that, it's like vulnerabilities in the system, especially if it's there's not like material harm or like physical damage to anything. It's almost immoral to not understand those weaknesses.
And that's what his best friend, who as an adult, they've known each other since they were kids, and as an adult, he has a radio show, and he talks about that too. As the story progresses, Boyingthump almost has this outlaw fame.
Right.
All of the bank robbers of the 1920s. And Winston, his buddy, starts using this to gather public sympathy for Kevin, because we come to find out he goes on the run, gets caught, and then is locked up with no due process for 5 years.
Yeah, and that's accurate. Yeah. Like Kevin Mitnick was locked up for a long time.
And Winston's reasoning for that is like he embarrassed the government. He embarrassed all these big companies by showing weaknesses and flaws, and starts to rally support around him. And is that kind of similar to what happened to Kevin?
That's exactly what I mean. Again, this is parallel to the real story. Okay. He got locked up, I think it was like 4.5 years or 5 years without a case. They just said like it was too complex. I think they finally got him on wire fraud charges.
Oh, that was my point. Sorry. Winston's argument to the public, which sways the public, is like no person was actually harmed. There was no physical or monetary harm that was done to any individual. He eventually does sort of break some laws, like stealing identities and stuff like that, but up to this, for much of his career, if you want to call it that, there was no real crime committed.
For me, that's an interesting thing, because in the times we live in right now, I'm becoming very angry about these people who are basically hoarding material because of the crisis we're in. And it's not illegal. So you just have more, they're not harming people.
Yeah, and as we're recording this, we're like neck deep in the COVID-19.
So technically these people rationalize what they're doing because they're just taking advantage of what is legal, right? They're finding a hole in the system. They can legally buy material and then resell it. Now the moral aspect is a little gray.
These people are doing, if we're speaking from a materialist like framework, like they are doing more material harm to the public than a Kevin character has ever done.
Right.
Yeah.
But for me, I guess I think it's easy for Kevin to think I'm just harming the corporations, and believe me, I am not defending them at all. I just sometimes I see there's some glimmer of things where like when Kevin reflects on the guard that he social engineered. Like, I worry, like, did that guard lose his job? How did that affect his life? Yeah. When he's helping the pimp set up a sex line, I wonder, like, what people were harmed.
That was the thing that I got to later when, jumping ahead in the story, Kevin, while he's on the run, he's working at a bar, and at the bar, he winds up coming into situations where he can help people out with his knowledge, and one of them is a movie producer who he basically taps. The producer's wife finds out she's having an affair. Kevin hacks the phone and then kind of washes his hands, like, here, I did this for you. Do whatever you may with it. The producer winds up killing his wife because he finds out she's cheating, and then, you know, in the heat of the moment winds up killing her. A pimp at the same time Kevin helps in the, from this bar, winds up getting around this system where they can put phone numbers in the back, like basically a call service. And he creates what, like a dead phone line, basically, to advert the cops from finding out their operation. But in doing that, the sex workers wind up working a lot more. And the pimp physically abuses them whenever they say, hey, look, I'm tired. I can't do this anymore. So Kevin is just using the technology to he's not the bad part in this per se. He's just like, look, I'm doing a service. You do whatever you may with it.
It's
but
true.
The consequences of it cause death and violence to a lot of women in the story.
Where on the alignment chart is he, Mr. DM? Dennis?
What?
Where on the alignment chart is he?
Right, exactly.
Is he chaotic neutral?
Right.
Because it's like, well, I mean, because he's kind of moralizing, and he's not, it's not moralizing really, he's amoral. He's prioritizing curiosity above all else.
Right.
Like,
and survival.
Can I do this?
Yeah. Because he gets lots of money for doing this.
And I guess I just watched, I don't know if you guys saw it, I just watched the McMillions documentary on the McDonald's thing on HBO. It's fascinating. And so he's scamming McDonald's. So
I'll have to torrent that after.
Yeah, exactly. So
is that a TikTok?
Cute.
But he's, you know, he's stealing from McDonald's. So how is that really harming anyone? But then you see the ramifications of, like, once everything falls out, like the businesses that were in charge of the security, and some of these people are out of a job. And so it's just, it's interesting. Like, I'm of two minds of this Kevin, in the sense of, like, look, I'm supporting him. I like the curiosity he has. I think it's crappy that he was bullied. I love his hustle. I'm totally for it. It's just that when we get into the amoral stuff where he's like, and I'm sure this is actually probably a lot of criminals are like this. Look, I'm only providing the tools.
Yeah.
You know, here's the gun. What you do with that gun afterwards, I'm not responsible for. But, you know, once again, it's just, I don't know. It's low-level stuff that I see even corporations doing, right? I'm just providing a service. But really, what the corporations aren't seeing is the ramifications to the people down. So this is just like a smaller level version of that mentality.
And then later on in the story, as Kevin gets more and more into these computers, there's a scene where it's his birthday and he gets his first computer, but... It's kind of sad no one shows up to his birthday. Even Winston, I think, is out of town and, like, is basically his one friend. And that kind of kicks off his career in computers. So this must have been, like, in the 80s, right?
Yeah, that's definitely 80s. He gets arrested in the 90s. Radio. Yeah, that would imply that's the 80s.
So that's a Radio Shack computer, right?
Yeah, the... Yeah, that was a Radio Shack computer. It was a good computer as far as I remember.
Yeah.
It was talked about a lot. No, also 80s. No, actually pre-80s, they would be 70s. The Misadventures of Steve and Steve, that was when the people that he bought the blue box from towards the beginning, that's supposed to be Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak.
Oh, that's right, because that's what they were into.
Steve Jobs infamously sold blue boxes.
Right.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
In Reed College as, like, a side hustle thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so blue boxes, basically, they last a 2600 hertz tone to open up what's called a trunk, which makes you, like, the phone system treats you as an operator,
which is what he
basically
breaks into.
Yeah.
Kevin's little scam on the two Steves is he calls them, says he wants to buy the box, and then Winston calls the cops and he's like, hey, we're being harassed by these two guys. So the cops come over. Hey, what are you doing? You know, fucking with these two kids or whatever.
Right.
You know, not like
in
a sexual way.
And then
Kevin goes over while they're being distracted. He pulls a lot of basically magician tricks where you use distraction and misdirection.
Yeah.
And so then he runs over and picks the back of their car and steals
it. Because, I mean, he even, like, mentions before that, like,
out of the trunk
they would have made a lot. I mean, it was probably worth it anyways for the cost of the blue boxes, but they were just erroneously expensive, so they did this little scam on the side.
I like this little Forrest Gump moment.
No.
Like, let's run into some famous people.
The part of the controversy with the real Kevin Mitnick, with all the charges, and the charges were nuts. Like, it was wire fraud. I think they built the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act law based off of Kevin Mitnick's thing, because they just didn't have a law comprehensive enough to do. They just don't quote me on. I think that's accurate. But most of it wasn't actually hacking. It was social engineering stuff like this. Even less so, because I don't even think he did like physical penetration,
right.
You know, stuff like lock picking and stuff like that. Yeah, huge amount of time in prison without any sort of trial.
Was Kevin caught up in Operation Sun Devil? Because this was a real thing. They talked about this in the book, which was a sting operation that was based out of Arizona, but they did it in every single major city where they busted all these people who were not technically hackers. It came out later that it was basically just a publicity stunt to show like, hey, we're doing something about these hackers.
Was that the time that Steve Jackson Games was busted for their book?
That was Sun Devil.
And they were like, this is like a manual. And it was a role-playing game.
How to do.
It was like a futurist. It was Cyberpunk 2020, essentially. Yeah.
The real-life Kevin, and they mentioned at the very beginning here, is that they put him in solitary confinement because the federal prosecutors convinced the courts that he could whistle into the phone and get NORAD to launch missiles. Like, so he couldn't have access to a phone. He had to be in solitary confinement because he could cause a nuclear fallout just by having access to a phone.
This sounds like to me when at the dawn of the internet and all that, when Hollywood writers who were probably in their 60s and 50s back then didn't know anything about the internet or computers, they would just write in, you know, hacks this, does that.
Yeah, it's like the War Games mentality.
With the glasses, with the green text showing up and scrolling.
All the stock imagery hackers.
One of the things that really gets Kevin going is he starts getting these computer games and he starts burning them for his friends, basically. But then what he does is creates a little code in there that the 100th time they reboot their computer, Boink Thump Owns Your Soul Sucker pops up.
Right, and it just stops the game.
Yeah, and it inadvertently creates this virus that... Was that his plan? Or that just like a bonus?
Well, thing? A lot of times I would say sometimes things grew faster than people anticipated because...
Than the hackers and coders had planned
on it. Just thought, oh, this will be this thing, but they didn't realize it would be shared.
The story moves along and Winston is almost like his Jiminy Cricket. We're like, we shouldn't be doing this, man. Come on. And then...
Oh, I wanted to mention this earlier. Winston is actually a real thing. It wasn't like a childhood friend of Kevin Mitnick, but Emmanuel Goldstein, the editor-in-chief and creator of 2600 Magazine, ran a Free Kevin campaign that was trying to free Kevin Mitnick while he was being held in jail.
This Winston character is an amalgamation of him and Christian Slater's character from Pump Up the Volume.
Yeah. Well, I mean, any good character has a little bit of Christian Slater.
There are four Heathers.
So Emmanuel Goldstein, he's like this New York editor-in-chief. The character, Matthew Lillard's character in Hackers, was named Emmanuel. His real name was Emmanuel Goldstein based off of that, so...
Little
bit of trivia.
We got a Christian Slater reference and Matthew Lillard. We're just missing the Freddie Prinze. We just got to get the Freddie Prinze Jr. And then we just need some point to reference Booker, the actor who played Booker from 21 Jump Street.
Right.
And then eventually the Booker spinoff. And we'll hit the 90s.
Right.
Well, I was going to say trifecta, but it'd be the quadfecta.
Yeah. Quadfecta.
So, do you guys, I mean, I don't know the real Kevin story in terms of what he experienced. There's got to be something about Kevin where he gets the shit beat out of him. He's in a very scary situation. I'm surprised he doesn't shit his pants. He just kind of seems to kind of go along with life. I would be terrified if I were in his situation where, you know.
You're talking about throughout the book or something in specific?
Throughout where they show his prison life, which is, I assume, actually really the same time. But throughout, they show where he has a roommate who's a racist. He gets cajoled by some gangsters to try to help him, and that he either gives them bad information or like they weren't able to execute what he said.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. They didn't do what
understand.
He said. Yeah,
and so they totally pummel him, and then this other Italian mob boss takes care of them. But then,
and that was what was interesting is that mob boss. They diverge onto that mob boss for like a page or two about how this guy was in there, but he had such influence over the prisoners and the guards that Kevin's life up to that point was kind of hellish. He had wanted to work in the library. They're like, nope. You could tell the entire prison system, government system was like, fuck with this dude while he's in jail because he basically embarrassed us. And then once he gets kind of under the wing of this, under the protection of this mob boss, who he accidentally, he was like, I should have died. He trips. He's on the floor
Hits a trash can.
Hits a trash can and knocks the trash can onto the bottom floor that hits this mob boss in the head. Right. And I'm curious who that was.
As far as I understand, his prison stuff was pretty innocuous. I mean, the feds were trying to fuck with him a lot, but I don't think anybody in prison was trying to. I mean, he was in solitary for quite a bit, and he had a big...
Well, that was one of my favorite parts of the book, is when they show his typical day life, and then the little thing on the bottom says, read this 250 times, and then you'll understand what his life was like. I thought, oh, that's brilliant. But, just like, imagine doing those two pages over and over again, where the guard is like throwing your stuff around.
There's parts in there where Kevin even figures out the puzzles of prison, and he's like, oh, if you want extra food, you drop your food on the floor in solitary confinement, make sure the area is clean, and he goes through about like how you can make a sex toy, how to wash your laundry. All in the confinement of your little space, which is probably as big as our studio room here, if not half the size of this. My point was, it was just another puzzle for him to figure out.
Right.
Shout out to Ear Hustle Podcast.
But yeah, so then his life changes once he befriends this mob boss, and how they do that is over chess. The mob boss likes playing chess. Kevin's good at it because it's another puzzle.
Yeah.
And then things start to go better for him for a little while, and then he's... on the phone, talking to Winston.
Phone check.
Yeah, and then this big-ass dude comes in. And I flipped through it several times just to see if that character was in the background watching him, because it felt like a setup to me.
Right.
Because this other prisoner comes up to Kevin when he's on the phone, and Kevin has this a lot of time, and it's the one time he lets the environment get to him. It's the guy's like sweating him, getting him closer and closer. And he's basically like, wait your fucking turn, man. I'm on the phone. And as soon as he says it, there's no other drawings on the page. It's just him with his eyes really big, like, fuck. Just like, fuck. And the prisoner proceeds to beat the shit out of him. Kevin does get a good lick in one time with the phone. The receiver smashes him in the face.
The guy was about to stab him.
His one weapon.
He still winds up getting shanked. Right. And then the guard that's watching him just closes the door and lets it happen. And then the guards wind up. This is ultimately what gets him out of prison. The character, I don't know about the real life Kevin, but the guards come in. It's all black. You just see the font basically setting him up to say, oh, it was a prison riot. Little do the guards know that Winston is recording the entire conversation on his end and uses that. And that finally sways everyone to like, okay, give him his trial finally after 5 years. The judge is like, and this is Winston's entire point through the entire thing is like, just get him to trial and give him time already served. Like, that's more than fair. They find him guilty and the judge says time served. Yeah. And from there, he goes into struggling really for the first year or two, trying to hold down a job, trying to even get hired. His PO, his parole officer, anytime, like, what does he work at the place where...
it's like a McDonald's.
Yeah, they're like, no, you can hack the cash register.
The real life Kevin, he was not allowed to use any electronics except for a landline phone. So, yeah, cash registers, all that stuff. He was not allowed to profit from his story.
Which happens in this.
For up to 7 years, something like that. So, yeah, I mean, there was this massive public awareness campaign about free Kevin. Like, there Kevin bumper stickers are a real thing. But yeah, he couldn't profit off of it any whatsoever. He could take like donations from like these organizations, but that's it.
Yeah,
so he really did struggle like this in real life.
He's approached at one point in the story by a Hollywood producer, and they're like, we want to make your story. And he's like, I would love to, but I can't. Yeah. You know, I can't profit off.
Yeah, I guess I was reading the wiki briefly this morning. I guess that's related to a Son of Sam law.
Right.
I didn't know that
like
was a
serial
thing.
Killers can't actually like profit from their stuff.
Or your O.J. Simpson.
Oh, dang. I would have serial killed if I knew I could have made a buck off of it. I
should have serial named.
But it again.
But yeah, even when he gets like shanked and everything like that, it's like, God, you know.
One of the things we forgot to mention was the three guards who did this to Kevin.
Mysteriously.
Wound up all committing suicide the same day in prison. I wasn't sure if that meant they were under arrest as prisoners or they were guards and committed suicide.
They were guards and a mafia guy.
Yeah, I assume that's what was
Oh, and then we forget to mention...
Correction officers don't get don't go to jail. What are you talking about?
Well, and especially the same jail they were in.
Yeah, right? I wasn't sure what...
But I forget, who's the character? He's throughout there. Is he an FBI guy? The one who ends up jacking off.
No, he's a reporter. So Ray Swayson or something like that.
Patrick Swayze's brother?
No, I'm not looking this. Yes, Patrick Swayze's brother. But he's representing he's like a journalist talking basically uninformed shit. That also is real. There's a book and associated movie called Takedown about the Kevin Mitnick story, but it's had nothing to do with the perspective of him. And it was just like this New York Times guy, I forgot his name, just kind of like regurgitating FBI line and taking it as journalism and just writing his entire career off of it. So that's who he's supposed to represent.
Well, clearly not looked upon favorably.
He's not very liked. There are, I don't know the name of them, there are some good, written by Kevin Mitnick autobiographies.
From his assault that happens in prison, he winds up losing his hand.
Right.
And this was a weird, I wasn't sure what the plot point of this or why this happened, but from that point on, he always keeps that hand in his pocket. And that I understand, he doesn't, want to draw attention to that. It's either hidden under a desk or out of sight, or he keeps it in his pocket. And then at the end of the book, Kevin and Winston are walking down the street and this guy wants to get an autograph and he reveals his missing hand, the stump, to this person. And the guy freaks out and then Kevin gets this weird look on his face, and that's the end of the book.
That's the very end of the book.
I was like, what is the statement? I don't understand.
Well, no, he was trying to, because he asked for the autograph. I'm looking at it right here. It's like, sure, do you have a pen?
Hence, no, I understand all that part, but Kevin is visibly...
Well, I guess it's because he had it kind of good at the end. He he actually got a book out and he smashed some girl.
Okay, so for me, what I interpret that at least is that throughout this story, I don't think Kevin's fully aware of all the consequences.
It's the final emotional...
Well, for me, I don't think he's fully aware of the consequences of everything. And so he's kind of going through life kind of not ignorant, but just not fully aware of everything that happens. A lot of this stuff would break me, to be perfectly honest. And so he kind of forgets. And I feel like at that moment he just realized, oh yeah, I did lose my hand.
Oh wait, yeah. Okay. No, that's exactly how I read it. It was kind of that, American Splendor, nothing can actually be all that good. There's always gonna be some sort of stubby, amputated reminder that life is shit.
And for the readers, we skipped over a lot. This is a really long book. It's really dense. There's a lot of stuff we skipped over. What do you think, Brian? You recommend the book or?
Yeah, I highly recommend the book. It's very 90s kind of nihilistic.
Would you still recommend it to people that won't get sexually aroused reading it?
I mean, even more so. I don't. Part of this is that I don't like that part of myself and Dennis.
I actually have to buy another copy because all my pages are stuck together.
Jesus Christ.
Terrible.
No, I would personally, I recommend it. Ed Pisker. Amazing artist as always.
I mentioned before this, I don't know Ed Pisker. Can you talk about other stuff that Ed Pisker does?
He does a hip hop history
of family tree.
Yeah, and he does this retelling of X-Men.
The hip hop family tree is what really got his name out there.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a four-part series. There's a Netflix series that's basically lifted from the hip hop family tree.
What is that name of that show?
But it's hip hop something or other, hip hop history or something like that.
I guess that's his thing, is retelling stories, because that's the X-Men.
Yeah,
and is retelling the history of the X-Men, the hip hop,
but in a condensed kind of
or funny way.
The X-Men book is nonfiction, it's about making of his X-Men.
No, it's for instance, the Dark Phoenix saga. He retells it, in kind of a
condensed, almost redrawn way.
He's like the Herodotus of comic book.
I don't know who that is.
You're becoming Dennis.
Oh, really? He's considered. He wrote what's considered the first history book. He's like an ancient Greek guy. He wrote the histories. So, but it was like full of revisionist crap. He was like, the first person to lie about history was the first person to write a history book.
So that's accurate. So like the way he condenses the story is kind of funny in some ways and everything like that.
And it's just really drawn well. Yeah. But yeah. All right.
And I find the story really compelling. I was very interested, especially from someone who was a witness to some of this culture, but not much like Brian. I wasn't like into it, but I was fascinated by it.
Yeah. No, if you like any of this, I'm not cyberpunk, but like 90s hacker, like intrigue, espionage type stuff. If you've watched Mr. Robot and had sort of like,
totally. You're a fan of Mr. Robot, read this.
If you think hackers ride around town on rollerblades and hackers is your only experience, or The Net starring Sandra Bullock, you might want to read this because it gives you a little bit more detail about
You're my only friend. I was. Or you like Short Circuit.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you grew up in the 90s.
Yeah, I liked it. You could definitely see a leap between his artistic abilities from this book to X-Men Grand Design. Worlds different.
Right.
In the artistic abilities, which is funny because at the end of X-Men Grand Design, Ed Piskor has loved the X-Men since he was a little kid. And the drawings back there are
that's amazing.
So little kiddish. And you're like, wow, to see the evolution of his abilities from that drawing to WYSIWYG to Grand Design and Hip Hop Family Tree is really amazing. But yeah, I recommend reading it, even if you don't know much. I don't know anything about that world, really. It was a really good story.
No, I was wondering about that, actually. It was like the fact that I have all this background in this, it's like, would this actually be interesting to somebody?
I'd be curious to see what Frankie would have thought of this book, because she didn't like X-Men Grand Design. Because this is a much better retelling of someone's history, whereas X-Men Grand Design, if you don't know those stories,
Grand Design is a love letter to those stories.
Yeah.
So you have to like know them to understand, oh, okay, this is what happened.
Because it skips stuff. So,
right.
I mean, it's like
a slideshow almost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this one actually explains things. So like, even if you didn't have knowledge of some of this stuff, it doesn't give a lot of background. So if you don't know what a BBS is, you're just like,
he explains it.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, it's explained in there. But yeah, I'd recommend reading it. So Brian, if you want anybody to follow you on the social medias,
most
of your stuff is locked.
Yeah, no, I'm public on Twitter. I don't have a Facebook or Instagram or any of that. I'm what author Cory Doctorow calls a Zuckerberg vegan. On Twitter at Restless Soma, I'm a Sacramento-based graphic designer and visual artist. I talk a lot about that stuff, weird cyberpunk stuff, a lot of socialism. Yeah, that's pretty much all I do. I'm a dad.
And what about the podcast, Dennis?
You can find us on the Insta, Facebook, Twitter, at GNX Explorers Club.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Bye.